As usual, we are all gathered here today to listen to another exposition of the Lord Buddha's teaching. Before we commence, let us all take a moment to remind ourselves of how extremely fortunate we are to be his students, to be his disciples, to consider him our teacher, he who is none other than the perfect one, the most magnificent one, the perfectly enlightened one, the fully awakened one, the infinitely victorious one, the undefeated one, the Supreme Buddha. Let us take a moment to pledge our allegiance to him as his lifelong disciples. This is for no other reason than to make a solemn promise to ourselves to keep on the path to our salvation, to continue our practice until we have achieved that which he wanted for all of us, and that is our own salvation, our own liberation, achieving our own freedom. That is all he expected of us, and that is all he wanted from us. This is a promise we make to ourselves, rather than anything else. So let us all be upstanding then, and recite the stanzas which were once uttered in exaltation by the householder Upali, when he was once questioned by his former teacher, "Whose refuge have you taken now? Whose disciple are you? Who do you now consider your master, having forsaken me?" The question was asked of him, and today we shall give the answer.
Bhirasa vigata mohasa pabhinna khilasa vijita vijayasa anighasa susamachittasa buddhasilasa sadhupanyasa vesantarasa vimalasa bhagavato tasa Savako hamasni akatankatissa tusitassa vantalokamisassa muditassa katasamanassa manujassa antimasarirassa narassa anopamassa virajassa bhagavato tassa savako hamasmi asansayassa kulassa venaikassa sarati varassa anuttarassa ruchira dhammassa nikkhankassa Abhasakarasa Manachidasa Virasa Bhagavato Tassa Savako Hamasmi Nisabhasa Appameyasa Gambhirasa Munapattasa Khemankarasa Vedasa Dhammattasa Sangutattasa Sangatigasa Muttasa Bhagavato Tassa Savako Hamasmi Nagasa Pantasenasa Kina Sanyojanasa Muttasa patimantakas dhonas pannadhajas vitaragas dantas nippapanchas bhagavato tas savakohamasmi. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa.
And now to seek refuge in the Noble Triple Gem and observe the precepts. Please repeat all together and after me. And as you take a moment to seek refuge, do remind yourselves of what exactly it means to take refuge in the Noble Triple Gem. You should know this now. Why is it you need this refuge? And that there is no other alternative to freedom than taking refuge in the Noble Triple Gem. Please repeat all together and after me.
Buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Dutiyampi buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Dutiyampi dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Dutiyampi sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Tatiyampi buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Tatiyampi dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Tatiyampi sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Saraṇāgamanaṃ sampunnaṃ. Pānātipātā vēramani sikkhāpadaṃ samādhiyāmi. Adinnādāna vēramani sikkhāpadaṃ samādhiyāmi. Kāmesu micchācārā vēramani sikkhāpadaṃ samādhiyāmi. Musāvādā vēramani sikkhāpadaṃ samādhiyāmi. Surāmeraya majjapamā daṭṭhānā vēramani sikkhāpadaṃ samādhiyāmi. Tisaraneṇa saddhiṃ pañca sīlaṃ dhammaṃ sādukhaṃ surakkhitaṃ katvā appamādena sampādeta.
Okay, you should all now be seated. Before we continue, let us take a moment to invite the countless celestial beings, wherever they may be within this 10,000 world systems, let us take a moment to invite them to join us. Do this with a sense of gratitude towards them. Let us not forget that among them will be those who have been mothers and fathers to us, our elders, our teachers, our best of friends, siblings, and those who came to our help and support when we needed it. Today they are destitute in samsara. Without the teaching of the Buddha, without a path to free themselves, without anyone to show them the light. Having found the Noble Triple Gem, it is now our duty to return the debts that we owe them. And this is why we invite them to join us. With a feeling of compassion, boundless compassion, and a feeling of fulfilling our duty, our obligation, and being grateful towards them. So as I now make this invitation, out to all those beings out there, I ask you to extend that invitation out in your hearts and in your minds, reaching out as far as you possibly can. Extended that invitation out as far as you possibly can. Anyone within earshot of this sermon, may they join us, may they witness this meritorious deed. May they rejoice in the merits. May such merits help them to free themselves from the woeful plains. May they be able to listen to the teaching of the Buddha, understand and comprehend it, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. So with those thoughts and feelings and sentiments of deep and boundful, unbounded compassion, invite them to join us.
Samanta chakravalesu atra gacchantu devata saddhammam muni rajasya sunantu sagga mokkhadam dhamma savana kalo ayam bhadanta dhamma savana kalo ayam bhadanta dhamma savana kalo ayam bhadanta.
Excuse me. And also before we begin, let us all take a moment to remind ourselves that although we find ourselves today in noble companionship, in the association of good and noble friends, we have not always been so fortunate. As a matter of fact, we have virtually always been in the association of ignoble, immoral friends. Those associations defiled our minds with desire, aversion, and delusion. And having been blinded with ignorance and attachment, countless times we will have offended, desecrated, reviled, and insulted the Noble Triple Gem. The consequences of such actions are today, it becomes incredibly difficult for us to travel the path to Nibbana, as that which you insulted, the very same, keeps away from you. That which you hindered, the very same is hindered from you. That which you obstructed, the very same is obstructed for you. Today we understand the errors of our ways, and we realize that nothing is so sublime, nothing so pure as the Noble Triple Gem and the Buddha Shasana. So having realized the errors in our ways, let us take a moment to seek forgiveness for any thoughts, words or actions of revile, desecration, slander or insult we may have directed towards the Noble Triple Gem, the Samma Sambuddhas, Paccheka Buddhas and Arahatta Buddhas, Anagami, Sakrudagami, Sotapannas, be they on the path or having attained the fruits, as well as the Buddha's ministry to Sambuddha Shasana. And as you take a moment to seek this forgiveness, let me urge you to make a solemn promise to yourself to never conduct yourself in such manner again. And finally, let us all make a firm resolve. May all of the merits we will have accumulated throughout our journey in samsara come to our rescue on this occasion, come to keep us on the path to liberation, come to guide us. Today, as we find ourselves in the presence of a teacher, may those merits help me to retain my concentration, keep my focus, remain alert throughout the sermon, and be able to realize the Four Noble Truths, free myself from the four great hells once and for all, and achieve the ultimate bliss of Nibbana. With that resolve in mind, I invite you all to prepare yourselves to listen to this sermon. It is important for us all to become proficient in the Dhamma as soon as possible. To become proficient is to know how to use the skills that you have, the knowledge that you have gained. Because these are the two things that you can pick up along the way. It is said that talents are something you are born with. Knowledge and skills you pick up along the way. So to become proficient in the Dhamma is to be skillful, is to understand how and when to use the Dhamma to rescue yourself. when life throws its practical problems at you, to be confident that you can fight your own battles. That is very important. I want you all to achieve that stage as soon as possible. I want you all to become self-sufficient as soon as possible. It is a privilege to have a teacher, but it is not a right to have a teacher. When something's a right, you can demand for it. When something's a privilege, you have to treasure it. A privilege can be taken away from you at any moment. So today you may have a teacher to guide you and show you the path, to answer your questions, to take time out of the time that they have to put towards their own liberation. And help set you right when you struggle with some of the practical problems that life throws at you. What I like, what I want, is for you all to become proficient in the Dhamma, self-sufficient in the Dhamma. I want for there to be a day when no matter what problem comes into your mind, and I mean the practical problems, you have answers to them. I don't mean the theoretical questions and problems. I mean the practical problems. I want for there to be a day as soon as possible where you know hand on heart that any practical problem, in other words, any moment suffering touches your life, you know like the back of your hand what to do about it, how to identify it, how to deal with it, how to sort it out. I want for the day where you don't need to go after anyone. That is what I wish for you all. That is what I want to help you all achieve. The purpose of these sermons, as we continue them, remains that. I was reminded yesterday that it has been a year since we shut our gates and had to quarantine ourselves. Did you realize a year has gone past? A whole year? More than 300 days have gone past. That's a whole year out of your life. A whole year in which you did not have the privilege of meeting your teachers. Of course, we must consider the Dhamma as our teacher. But my personal belief is until we have entered Parinibbana, it is always good to have a person as a teacher by your side. Even if it is not to help you cleanse your mind of defilements, to show you right from wrong in the conventional sense, to keep you in line with the conventions, and therefore live a livelihood with minimum disruption and hassle to others around you. because there could be an arahant. Who does not understand the conventions of society? That is perfectly possible. Because conventions are something we learn along the way from our teachers, just as much as anicca, dukkha and anatta. But once anicca, dukkha and anatta have been fully installed in the mind, nitya, sukha and anatta are dispelled completely and entirely, never to return. So the mind is free of defilements. But no one other than the perfect one knows exactly how and fully well how to fit in to the society that they live in at any given moment in time. So this is why I say, until one enters Parinibbana, it is beneficial for one to have a teacher by their side. But let us not forget that that is a privilege. It is not a right. So a year has passed by where you could not meet your teachers. I speak to those who consider ourselves as your teachers. When I'm reminded of this, the question that comes to my mind is, have I done enough to empower you? Have I done enough to make you self-sufficient? Have I done enough? Have I taught you enough? Have I guided you and shown you the path correctly and rightly and fully to help you fight your own battles? Any good teacher, I believe, must judge themselves by that. I don't believe a good teacher is someone who believes that their students must always be dependent on them. It may be all good and well until the teacher is around, but what about the day when the teacher is no more? Then what happens? Then they're all by themselves. Then who's there to look after them? So this is a question I ask myself. Every sermon I sit down to preach to you, every time I sit down to talk to you, particularly over the time that we have spent apart in this way, I have asked myself, have I done enough? When I speak with Guru Hamrana Hanse, we discuss this among ourselves. Have we done enough to help you empower yourselves, to help you fight the battles of raga, dvesha and moha? When Mara comes knocking on your door, are you able to keep that door shut and not let an unwelcome Mara in, knowing what catastrophes that Mara may bring into your life? I suppose this is a question that I may never be able to get an answer fully to. But whether I get an answer to it or not, I think there is something that you can do to help make me feel better. If you consider me as a teacher, then there is something that you can do to help me feel better. And that is to do whatever you can in your power to become self-sufficient in the Dhamma, to become proficient in the Dhamma, to become empowered, to fully take refuge in the Noble Triple Gem. Because you don't take refuge in a person, you take refuge in the Noble Triple Gem. We have always reminded you about this. You can't take refuge in me. You can't take refuge in Guru Swami Nuhansi. You can't take refuge in a person. You can take refuge in Nibbana. You can take refuge in the path to Nibbana. And you can take refuge in what you have to do on the path to get to Nibbana. That is what Buddha, Dhamma and Sangha are. I don't deny that the Buddha, in a conventional sense, is believed to be a person who spent 28 years of his life as a bodhisattva in his final birth, as a young prince, and then renunciated, became an ascetic. 7 years on, he went on to become the supremely enlightened one. Do you know that the Buddha himself sought refuge in the Noble Triple Gem? So who did the Buddha seek refuge in? Which Buddha? Is it different for Buddhas? Don't Buddhas seek refuge in the Noble Triple Gem? Did they not exist until the Buddha came along and started to preach the Dhamma? Did the Buddha not exist before the Buddha? You know, in these sermons, I want you to take a step further in. We don't deny or reject any of the superficial interpretations. We are quite happy to accept them and see the world in that way. But it's also important and interesting to go a few steps deeper. What did the Buddha take refuge in? Would it be fair to say, who did the Buddha take refuge in? Because at the end of the day, if all that exists is mind and body, and it is the cleansing of the mind that needs to happen for one to become any one of the three Buddhas, an Arahat Buddha, a silent Buddha, or a supreme Buddha, then there can only be one path to the cleansing of the mind. In the Buddha's own words, Ekayeno ayam bhikkhave maggo, sattanam visuddhiya. He did not say, except for Buddhas. The Buddha sought refuge in the Buddha. Would you believe me if I said that? The Buddha sought refuge in the Dhamma. I think that you will be okay. You'll accept that. Because you'll quote the Buddha in his own words, Ananda, I did not have a teacher. The Dhamma was my teacher. But the Buddha also sought refuge in the Sangha. And then you might ask, well, hang on, isn't it the Buddha who established the Sangha, the community? So there was no Sangha before the Buddha. So how could the Buddha have sought refuge in the Sangha? When you analyze it from a conventional sense, all these questions start to pop up. But if you go deeper and look at the profound meanings, you realize that for any mind to achieve liberation, there is no other answer than the Noble Triple Gem. Let us understand, folks, that it is a mind that seeks liberation here. A mind. It is the mind that seeks liberation here. It is the mind that needs to be cleansed here. How can you give a name? How can you label a mind? You have a name, right? Is it fair to say that that name is the name of your mind? Let's say your name's Peter. Is it safe? Is it reasonable? Is it fair to say that that is the name of your mind, Peter? Is it reasonable to say then, well, actually, no, it's your body that is Peter? So when a part of you gets amputated, are you less Peter than you used to be? If you get a tumor on your back, are you a bit more Peter than you were? The whole body discussion, I think, you know, that's water under the bridge, isn't it? By now, I have given you enough and concrete evidence to prove to you that this entity that we keep referring to as a person or an identity, to attribute that to the body is absolutely meaningless. We have analyzed this over and over and over again. You don't become less Peter after having trimmed your fingernails or having had a haircut or an appendectomy. You don't become more Peter when you grow up. At 6 years of age, I ask you, what's your name? I'm Peter. At 60 years of age, I ask you, what is your name? You give me the same answer. But there is more of you, it seems like it. You put that body mass on a scale, and there's a vast difference. So, is there more Peter? Where did all that Peter come from? You'll say, well, that was me growing up, and it was from the food that I consumed. So, did the food bring you Peter? What sort of food did you eat? I ate carrots. So, can we go and call those carrots Peter? I also ate chicken and beef. Now we have a real big problem. So, was the chicken or the cow called Peter? For when parts of them became parts of you, all of a sudden we stopped calling whatever names those animals had, and now we start calling Peter. You see, there's some confusion here, isn't there? It's just from a very young age we have accepted that we have a name, and we all like our names, don't we? What is the sweetest sound that your ears have ever heard? Indeed. So much so that in the book titled How to Win Friends and Influence People, one of the things they say you must do is use a person's name when you address them. Apparently you can win their heart that way. People just love it when you call them by their names. Because it gives them a sense of identity. It adds value to their sense of identity. We discussed this at quite some length when we talked about Sam. Where's Sam? Right? So, I think we can all come to the agreement that to attribute any part of Peter to any part of your body is nonsensical. Only a fool would do that. And besides, how could you say you were, this is my previous birth. In my previous birth, I was a Deva. And my name then was Vishva. But now you're called Peter. So then you realize, well, thoughts arise. Or thoughts arose and passed away. And thoughts arose and passed away. Thoughts arose and passed away. And at one point, thoughts arose and passed away. And then the next time it arose, that mind was, the previous thoughts arose in the body of the Deva, and the immediately subsequent thought arose in the body of a human. And now, name change from Vishwa to Peter. But when that gives you the impression that surely then it must be the body that I refer to as Peter, we have brought up ample evidence to prove to ourselves that no, it is meaningless and nonsensical to think our body as the identity that we feel that we are. So the Dhamma then is to cleanse the mind. Whose mind, if I ask? You must understand that that question does not make a whole lot of sense. I'm trying to prove to you that the Buddha sought refuge in the Noble Triple Gem himself. And why I say that that was the case. Because then you will fully realize, you will clearly understand the Noble Triple Gem. Why is that important to understand the Noble Triple Gem? Why is it important to understand the Noble Triple Gem? Because when you understand the Noble Triple Gem, you realize that there is no alternative to true happiness than to seek refuge in the Noble Triple Gem. Once you realize that, immediately you seek refuge in it. And the moment you do that, you have become a sotapanna. That's why that's important. It's the day when you utter, Natthi me saranang anya, Buddho me saranang varang. Natthi me saranang anya, Dhammo me saranang varang, natti me saranang anyang, sangho me saranang varang. The day you utter these words, either out loud verbally, or at least in your mind, When your mind fully acknowledges, natti me saranang anya, buddho dhammo sangho me saranang varang, that is the day that you have become a sotapanna. That is why it's important. Just because we say it every day before the start of a sermon doesn't mean it's of little importance. That is a trap that people often fall into, right? When something becomes too often, too frequent, then people begin to think that those things are of little value. Those are not the important things. What we haven't heard thus far, that's the important stuff. So they keep on searching, keep on looking, going through the pages of the books and asking confounded questions. There's no need for that. I want you to become proficient in the Dhamma. I want you to become self-sufficient. I want you to become a sotapanna. I want you to seek refuge in the Noble Triple Gem. All of these things mean the same thing. I want you to realize Nibbana. I want you to become awakened. I want you to see the light. I want you to embark on the path. I want you to start the journey that ends all journeys. All of this means the same thing. So this is what we ask ourselves. Have we done enough? A year has passed. We don't know how much longer this is going to continue. So we keep asking ourselves, did we do enough? Are we doing enough? You have no idea, folks, how often, particularly the senior monks at our monastery, come together and we discuss your well-being. What else we could do to help you, along with the members of the Charity Trust. Every fortnight we come together and we discuss, and then even in between, whatever we have discussed in those regular sessions, we take away and discuss with other monks, and then put plans in place. Turn plans into actions. Sometimes some things take time to develop from an idea to a product. So there is an incubation time, because all of this has to happen alongside us putting time towards our meditation. And yes, of course, you can meditate while you're doing something else. But if you want to completely focus yourself on one point or aspect of the Dhamma, then, of course, you have to shut yourself off from the hustle and bustle of the day-to-day activities. At least for that duration of time. This may sound like I'm patting my own back, but I'm telling you the honest truth. Never in my life have I seen a group of people come together to think, to plan, to organize themselves, to act for the well-being of others so much so than the Mahasangha. I've never seen that before in my entire life. I have worked myself as a senior manager in all sorts of positions and places in the world, but while they were for the benefit of others, there was always something expected in return. What can we get back in return? Whenever there was a give, there was always an ask. And usually it was profits for the organization that we worked for. But that, all of that has changed. Now it's a very different setup, a very different environment. That's why I say I've never seen a group of people come together to think, to analyze, to plan, to spend sleepless nights thinking, coming up with ideas to help people with virtually nothing expected in return. As the Mahasangha, I feel proud to be part of that. I feel so proud to be part of that. I know I digress from the point I was trying to discuss, but I thought this is worthy of mentioning. It may sound to you that it seems like I'm patting my own back here. I'm blowing my own trumpet here. But no, I speak of the Mahasangha. That is the Bhikkhu Bhikkhuni and Upasaka Upasika. So those are not just monks and nuns. It includes all of you. All of you who've taken part, who continue to take part, and who plan on getting involved in disseminating the teachings of the Buddha. What can you expect in return? Except for Nibbana, what else is there that you expect in return? Absolutely nothing. You don't expect any sensual delights or promotions or titles or a rank or a swiveling chair. Nothing. All you expect is peace within. You give peace and you expect peace within. You know, if anyone deserves the Nobel Peace Prize, I think that's the Mahasangha. I doubt that day will ever come. So perhaps maybe not the Nobel Peace Prize, but I'm sure they have already won the Nobel Peace Prize. Anyone who's a member of the Mahasangha goes on to achieve the Nobel Peace Prize. Nobel Peace Prize, maybe that's for other pursuits. You are all part of the Mahasangha, the community of the Sangha. Do consider that a privilege. Sometimes, as I said, it takes time for you to witness the outcomes of all the hard work that goes on behind the scenes. And sometimes you don't even know what's going on. You just see the result and you don't know that, and you don't even realize something's changed. I'll give you a very simple example. You of all people remember very well, and perhaps very painfully, how much we struggled with streaming the English sermons live to you on Sundays, particularly due to power cuts and other environmental factors that continued to relentlessly impede us time and time again, so much so that we began to think, was this a curse of some sort? You'd be surprised, some days, some Sundays, everything would be fine until 1:59 p.m. And then at 2 o'clock, there was a power cut. It happened 2 or 3 times in succession, so much so we began to wonder, what's going on here? Is someone trying to get in the way? But remember, we are the Mahasangha. You, us, all of us, we are the Mahasangha. So what did we do? We got together. There's a problem. People were suffering. People who are suffering, people who want an answer to the problem of suffering, are suffering because they can't get hold of the answer. As and when promised. So we got together and we came up with a plan. We worked hard on it. Fighting and working out the technology, learning, things that we left behind, things that we thought to ourselves, good riddance. You know, when I ordained, just before I left the UK, I remember shutting down my computer for the last time, and then I thought to myself, do I take this with me? And then I got an answer immediately after that. Are you kidding me? I was as happy as a kid in a candy shop when I shut down that blooming laptop for the last time. And I thought to myself, that's it. No more IT. And I told myself, now you're free. And then, 2 years on, 3 years on, today we are battling with technology again. Seems like till death do us part. Sometimes feels that way. A match made in hell. So, things that we left behind because they were an utter headache. Nothing else. All my life I've spent in technology. Things that we left behind and thought, glad to be leaving all that behind. We've had to pick some of those things back up again. We are fortunate. Actually, let me rephrase that. You are fortunate that we have among ourselves monks and anagarikas who are well versed in the nuances of technology. That's what they lived and breathed, like as lay people. and with compassion towards people who are suffering and looking for an answer to suffering. We got back together, banged our heads together. Can't say pulled our hairs out because we don't have any left. Spent a couple of sleepless nights trying to figure out a solution to this problem. And perhaps you don't even know it, but behind the scenes, a team of our monks, as well as with help from our Anagarikas, we were able to come up with a solution to the problem. So today they assure me that henceforth, right on at 2 o'clock, every Sunday, this sermon will stream live, no interruptions. And that our listeners, all over the world, they'll be able to listen into these sermons without any interruptions and get the most out of the time that they put in. That's what I'm saying. It baffles me how people have come together to really help and support others with nothing in return expected. They don't do it for the alms. They don't do it for the robes. They don't do it for the medicines. They do it because they want to help others. They do it because they have realized how precious the Noble Triple Gem is. And of course, they couldn't have done it by themselves. We don't go shopping for technology. We are so fortunate. Again, let me rephrase. You are so fortunate to have among you devotees who consider it their prime duty to put aside the first and foremost part of anything they earn every month towards the Sambuddha Shasana. You know, to this day, ever since we heard this principle from Guru Swaminarayana, there are some devotees who come a long distance just to make an offering every month of the first and foremost portion of their monthly earnings, because they want to make an offering of that towards the Sambuddha Shasana. They put that aside. Why? Because they want to help others. They come and hand it over to the charity trust members and say, use this to disseminate the Dhamma. Use this to help others, just as once I was helped. This Dhamma must reach far and wide, all corners of this globe. What else do you need? Do you need more technology? What else do you need? All you have to do is ask, and we'll provide it. It is really very humbling, I must say. And I speak of you here. Only yesterday, I got to hear that a family who live in Kandy. Apparently, there's a young boy in the family, and he'd fallen ill. Mother and father, they are devotees of the Dhamma. They are committed and devoted to the Dhamma and the practicing the path. So they had discussed among themselves that they want to, the answer to the problem to help him recover as soon as possible was to pay a visit to the monastery. But of course they know that visitors are not allowed during this period. But you know what they decided to do in the end? The father got on a bus. He travelled all the way from Kandy, all the way to Ingiriya, all the way to the monastery. Because you can't get over to this side of the gate of the monastery. So what did he do? He walked up right up to the gate. He got onto his knees. He worshipped. He turned back. And he went. Because they believe the noble triple gem they have found here. The blessings of the noble triple gem they believe they got from here. One might question, well, is the noble triple gem in a place? Valid question. But you must think about how those people feel about it. The sentiments that keep those people bound to the path of Dhamma. The very place that they got to listen to the Dhamma, realize the Dhamma, and found refuge in the Noble Triple Gem. They have come to realize, they've come to accept and acknowledge, for as long as we remain close in heart to the monastery, things will always be right for us. And that's all he did. He didn't want to talk to us, because he knew. Before the father came, he knew he wouldn't be allowed inside the monastery. And he turned back, and he went. Just think about it. They continue to listen to the sermons. They continue to do the things that we ask them to do. And so they find peace every day. I'm not saying now or suggesting that you should all do that now. But what I want you to think about is how people among you, how committed they are to this cause. And it is people like them that you're helping out. That's what I want you to learn from this little story that I shared with you. You know, there are people like that with so much commitment, so much dedication, that they'll come all the way, if not to speak to someone, if they're not allowed to do that, at least to pay their respect, and go back with nothing else. Those are the kind of people, they're the kind of people that you're doing what you're doing to help, to disseminate the Dhamma, to get these sermons out to them. That's what I'm saying. I've never seen in my entire life a bunch of people come together, both lay and clergy, to help others with absolutely nothing expected in return, other than Nibbana. It's truly remarkable, truly heartwarming, truly humbling. Because when you seek refuge in the Noble Triple Gem, folks, this is what happens to people. If this is happening to you, then don't get scared. This is normal. If you are beginning to feel like you just want to give everything you have to those who need it more than you do, that's normal. That is not me saying, go ahead and give everything you have away. You have to be sensible. But if those feelings, if those thoughts are starting to run through your mind, I'm telling you, that is normal. It happens when you start to seek refuge in the Noble Triple Gem. Because you realize the answer to everything is in giving. It is not in gathering. It is not in collecting. It is not in accumulating. It is in seeing the pain, the suffering in the minds of others, and in putting yourself forward to help. So when we come to hear of stories like the father who came all that way to do nothing else but to worship at the gate of the monastery, when we get to see how devoted you are to organize these sermons, to get word out to people, to transliterate these sermons so that they are available in other formats for those who may struggle to listen to the recordings, when we get to see how much of your time you're willing to put aside to help others, what you give, you get. So when we see that, we get activated. It sort of happens automatically. We become activated. And then we can't turn a blind eye. So then a couple of sleepless nights, even a week, or however long it takes, to put things right so that you can get to listen to the sermons without an issue. That becomes a concern of ours, even without you having to ask for it. You'll remember in the past how sometimes the sermons used to get interrupted. So much so that in the end we had to decide that it made little sense for the Swami Nuhansi to stop the sermon in the middle of it. We just continued with it and the recording was later published. Otherwise every week, or at least every other week, there was some sort of interruption. Either a technical issue, or a weather issue, a climate issue, power cuts, all sorts. But then when we saw your devotion, your commitment, your dedication to the Sambuddha Shasane, by which I mean your liberation and that of others, that is what the Sambuddha Shasane is. Your freedom and that of others, your happiness and that of others. But your happiness, your liberation, your freedom is no longer defined in dollars and cents, pounds and pennies, rupees. No. It is now purely defined in terms of Nibbana. So when we see that, we become activated. We become restless. We feel we have to. Your goodness drives us. Your generosity puts us into action. It's almost like you have the strings that control us. When we see you are generous, you are helpful, you give up everything on behalf of others, then the Mahasangha can't turn away. They can't turn your back on you. They can't turn their back on you. They can't stay put. So that is what happened. A team of us got together. Really, I wasn't involved in that. All I said was, please, let's help them. And then a team of our monks, Nayagarikas, got together. And they have now assured me that henceforth these servants will be streamed without interruption. And our listeners will not have to suffer as a result of the interruptions that we used to have. No more technical issues, hopefully, fingers crossed, should bother us. No more weather issues should bother us. I don't know what gimmick they have pulled up, but somehow they have managed to come up with a solution that will continue to ensure that you will be able to listen to these sermons without interruption. Such is the power of your merits. And such is the nature of the Mahasangha. That is why it is so important for you to continue doing your merits. It may be that, as I say, it's been a year since we've last met. But remember I said once, are you missing the Arame? I asked you this question. And remember I said, I feel you. Those are not just words. The more you continue with merits, meritorious deeds. What are meritorious deeds at the end of the day? It's helping others, isn't it? Cooking yourself a meal, how much merit do you earn from that? If you cook a meal for yourself, how much merit do you earn? What if it's 3 course? No? 10 course. Now let's turn up the number. On a gold plate. No? With silver cutlery. Still no? Well, there you go then. That is not how one earns merit. One earns merit by helping others. By looking after others. By caring for others. By helping others out in their times of need. These things are so important, folks. You have no idea. Perhaps you do, but if you don't, I really, really, really want you to understand this. There's only one way you can receive, and that is to give. So much so that when I get a chance to speak to our monks, I tell them, Swaminathans, don't you worry about your salvation. Work on that of others. Yours will come. Think about it. Think about the last time you saw a large tank. Or a lake. be that a natural lake or an artificial tank, the last time you saw one? What is its purpose? Its purpose is to give, isn't it? To distribute. To give others, those who don't have. So when the rain falls in an area, in any given area, when there's a lot of rain, when there's rainfall, and there's a tank in that area, how much of the water that falls from the skies falls into the tank versus how much of that falls outside of the tank? A large amount of water falls into the tank. Why? Because the tank's purpose is to give to others. So when you become a source of something, you also become the receiver of that thing. That very same thing. Don't worry about becoming a manufacturer. Become a distributor. Because whatever you distribute, you will receive. So give others. We talked about the importance of giving a couple of weeks ago. And giving comes in various shapes and sizes. And I mean, you know, do for others just as you do today. Care for them. Care about them. Look after them. Help them. When you see someone in pain, when you see someone suffering, when you see someone's got a problem, an issue, go and see what you can do to help them. And particularly, in the Sambuddhasasana, this is the best place, because this is the only place where you will find the Noble Triple Gem, the only refuge that exists for all sentient beings. So really, when you come together and start to give to the Sambuddhasasana. And remember, it does not have to be this monastery per se. And also, it is not only about giving to a monastery. It's about the time that you commit. You don't have to spend a penny. It's about your time that you commit. What about your well wishes? At the end of these sermons, when we transfer merits, we even pass merits to those who have extended their well wishes. Extended their well wishes to us. Even they are deserving of merits, because their well wishes will help us get over an obstacle one day, someday, however large or small it may be. Because the mind is a powerful thing. A mind that is used for good can do more good than a pair of loving parents or the best of kin. A mind that is tuned to do evil can do more harm, more damage than the worst of enemies. This is so important. So much so that even when you listen to a sermon, for instance, say you struggle to understand the contents of the sermon, maybe it gets too technical for you, and you're scratching your head wondering, geez, I couldn't understand that, what am I going to do now? And you might think, right, I'm going to listen to that a few times. Good. But don't do just that. There's something else you need to do. Go and help others. Help someone understand something they're struggling to understand. Remember, what you give is what you get. I live by that principle because it is so true. I have seen it so many times. I believe in that. I live and breathe by that principle. What you give is what you get. So if you struggle to understand a sermon, one of the best things you can do, folks, is go and help someone understand something they're struggling to get their head around. It may be a math problem, perhaps. Or it may be an issue that they're struggling with. Maybe they have... they've had an argument with someone in the family and they're finding it difficult to go and ask for an apology. Oh, forgive them. Here's an opportunity for you to do what you need to do to get what you need to get. So go and talk to them. Go help them. Help them overcome their problem. And then try and listen to the sermon again. If you've tried a couple of times and you're still not making sense of it, you're still struggling to get your head around it, go and talk to them. Help a couple of people. Especially to help awaken them. Open their eyes. Help them see a problem from a different perspective. Help them realize that the problem is not on the outside, the problem is on the inside. And do it in a way that they are able to accept. And that they're able to, and in a way that helps them find peace. Help them find noble peace. And you shall receive the Nobel Peace Prize. The Nobel Peace Prize is Nibbana. So, that is some really important advice. Might have sounded like a diversion from what we were talking about, but I can't emphasize this enough. This is so, so, so important. As I said, when I speak to our monks, I tell them, don't worry if you don't understand some of the deep and profound concepts that Guru Swami Nivasi sometimes preaches to us. Don't worry about it. Go and help others. Whatever you understand, help others understand that. Tell others not to engage in unmeritorious deeds. That you understand, don't you? Well, help them do that. Help people do that. Write an article which someone can read. And after having read that article, they'll think to themselves, I really must go and speak to my teachers and thank them for all that they did for me. Because that will put a smile on their face. See, now when you put a smile on someone's face, then we get activated. That's what happens. When you put a smile on someone's face, now you've given a smile. So it's time for you to receive a smile. And for you to receive that smile, you no longer can smile when given sensual delights. Right? A box of chocolates doesn't put a smile on your face any longer. A bunch of flowers doesn't put a smile on your face any longer. So, things that put a smile on your face, you are now deserving of. So what happens? We get activated. And then the only thing that can put a smile on your face, which is understanding that particular Dhamma point which you struggled to get your head around, in the next sermon, you get to listen to it. And all of a sudden, everything just starts to make sense. And then you feel at the end of that sermon was preached just for me. Swaminathan, you read my mind. I had that very specific question and you answered it. How did you do that? You're asking the wrong person. The answer is, you're asking the wrong person. I did nothing. You did everything. What did you do? What did you do in the last week to help others? That's what you did. You helped put a smile on someone's face. So, now you are deserving of a smile on your face. So what happens? Then whatever it is that can put a smile on your face has to come to you now. That is no longer a 10-course meal. No. It is the understanding of the Dhamma. So that is what comes to you now. You see, so this is how it works. Understand the principles that operate in this universe and you'll be able to live a happy life, folks. That is all that is required. What do we do when we go to school? What is schooling for at the end of the day? Like, why do we learn chemistry and biology and physics and math? It is to understand the ways of the world, right? How the universe works and operates. Why do we do that? To lead a happy life. To lead a life that is free, or at least with as little suffering as possible. That is why we learn these things. So likewise, the Dhamma is there to do just that. And in fact, on that note, I thought there was a testimonial that came through recently, and I want you to, I'd like to share that with you. Again, I reiterate this point. The reason I read these testimonials out loud is because I want you to understand how much of a difference you're making in people's lives. Do understand that this is not a soul venture. I'm doing very little here. I'm not saying this because I'm so humble. I'm saying this because this is the truth. It is not my doing, these sermons streaming live to you without interruption. I've got nothing to do with that. It's not my doing that there's a computer in front of me that is helping to capture this voice and convert it to zeros and ones and get it on the wire over to your ears. That's not my doing. That's your doing. It's not my doing that each and every one of you are today listening to this sermon. That's someone else among you who shared a link out with you, who said, hey, there are these sermons, I think you should listen to them. That's not my doing. In fact, I think what I do requires the least amount of effort. Physically maybe, but mentally the least amount of effort, because all I do is I come here, sit down, open my mouth and let Vipaka take over. So if it's Vipaka that's doing it, then really I've got nothing to do. As I say, sometimes I'm impressed by the things that come out of this mouth. So I read these testimonies out to you because I want you to understand how much the things you have done have helped others. And this is why now you can work out why is it our monks and Anagarikas had this thought one day, hey, you know what? We can't continue this way. Right? Our devotees, these people who are devoted to the Dhamma, these people, these innocent people who are devoted to getting this Dhamma out to others and helping others so much, how is it that we can watch by as they get together on a Sunday, sit down with perhaps gathering their families together, come on, Puta, let's listen to the sermon. Come on, darling, let's listen to the sermon. And then halfway through the sermon drops. Right? Or there's some weather issue, some technical issue. Right? Is it a surprise then that our monks begin to feel this way? Where do these thoughts come from? So all credit to you. Look at how much these people have changed. I'm informed that this very person, I think it's a lady, sent some emails to us long time ago also. Remember those emails that talked about feeling suicidal? Long time ago. And how they had to face some atrocities and some really terrible experiences growing up. Being abused by members of the family or a member of the family. You'll probably recall some of that. And I'm informed that this has come from the same person. Names are dropped off emails as they are sent to me, so I don't know who's who, but I'm informed that it's the same person. Let me read it out to you. Therwan Sarnan. I've been listening to the sermons for the past 2 years, Swaminarayan, and my life has changed completely. Neither I nor people around me can believe who I am today. And Venerable Sir, I would like to say thank you to you, sir, and to Dharmayobai for making me understand and comprehend the Dhamma the way I have today. Again, I repeat, I do little here. None of this would have been possible if not for everything that you all do as the Sangha, Bhikkhu Bhikkhuni, Upasaka and Upasika. What we do collectively, what we do coming together to put peace into the minds of others. That's why I say, if anyone deserves the Nobel Peace Prize, who do you think it is? My concern is, my husband doesn't really like following any religious stuff at home. So we don't indulge in any religious activities. Which means even the sermons that I have been listening to have been on the quiet without his knowledge. He has nothing against Buddhism, as he's a Buddhist too, but he has issues with the Sangha. He stereotypes and says that all the Sangha today is a farce, etc., as they are into politics, money, fame, power, etc., etc. And can you blame him? I don't know, in the Buddha's words, A Sangha is Bhikkhu Bhikkhuni Upasaka and Upasika. Bhikkhu Bhikkhuni Upasaka Upasika are those who have dedicated and committed their lives to Nibbana. Not politics, money, fame, power, etc., etc. So, the only contentious point here is that a group of people who engage in the above, unfortunately, her husband believes is a Sangha. That is not the Sangha. Who is the Sangha? Sangha are those who make it their life's purpose to bring peace into the life of others. That is who the Sangha is. And so since I don't want him to insult or desecrate the Sangha, I do it quietly and unnoticed to him, which keeps everything calm and quiet in the house. Good decision. Good choice. Personally, he's a very good person who does a lot of meritorious deeds towards people. Being that kind of a person, I don't want him to acquire any bad merits with bad thoughts or words. So I keep things quiet purely for his sake. What a remarkable wife this person is. You know, this is the kind of Buddhist that I like to see. Not that, you know, there are some people who call themselves Buddhists. The moment someone starts to insult the Buddha or the Dhamma or the Sangha, right, they'll pick up weapons. They'll start a fight and say, how dare you insult the Buddha? Do you think that's a Buddhist? Someone who picks up a weapon when someone insults the Buddha and says, you say another word to the Buddha, I'm going to slit your throat. Do you think that's a Buddhist? They'll even say, you know, Buddhism runs in my blood and veins. I'm so Buddhist that if I ever find anyone insulting Buddhism, I'll make it the last day they say anything like that. That's how much of a Buddhist I am. All we can say is anything but. But here we have, lo and behold, someone who I believe is a true Buddhist. Where she has a husband who has unfortunately mistaken people who are into politics, fame, money, power, etc., etc., etc. He believes that they are the Sangha. So clearly it's a misunderstanding there. Sangha are not that. Who is the Sangha? Sangha is a community of people who come together to bring peace into the lives of others. For what in return? A nice big fat bonus at the end of the year? Or a new car? A promotion? A big office? A title? An honorary title? A doctorate, maybe? For what in return? Nothing but peace in return. All they expect is the Nobel. Not the Nobel, the Nobel. All they expect is the Nobel Peace Prize. As per your instructions and guidance, it makes it impossible for me to do a Buddha Puja or meditate as a result of this situation. Completely understandable. So basically, I do meditate when I go to bed lying down for very short spells. See? You know, seriously, folks, don't you? Isn't this the stuff that Buddhists are made of? And eventually, isn't this the stuff that Arahants are made of? I mean, look at that. I was just wondering, how do I follow the instruction that the Swaminarayana gives me? Her immediate response is not, well, you know, I have a husband and he doesn't like me doing any of this, so I'm not going to do it. That's not her excuse. She's thinking to herself, how can I do it? Yeah, it's no big deal for a man without a leg to say, I can't run. Because why? I ain't got a leg. What, do you want me to give you an applaud? Well done for figuring that out. That's not a hero. A disciple of the Blessed One does not do like that. Someone who really wants to win will think to himself, how is it that people who don't have legs run? That is what winners are made of. That's the kind of stuff. That's the spirit. I don't have a leg, I can't run. Is a loser. I don't have a leg. How do people who don't have legs run? That's a winner. I don't have wings, I can't fly. That's a loser. How do people who don't have wings fly? That's a winner. And there's no one else around who does it. I'm going to find a way. That is how someone becomes victorious. You know, in her own way, in her little way, what she's doing is truly remarkable, this lady. So basically what I do is I meditate when I go to bed lying down for very short spells. It may be that, you know, the moment after a long day's work, you lie down on your bed and, you know, in a very short period of time, perhaps she falls asleep. You can't blame her. But at least she's trying. She's not decided for herself, I'm not going to do Buddha Puja, I'm not going to meditate, I'm not going to do any of this because I can't. Why? I've got a husband who doesn't like any of this. Answer this question. Whenever she refrains from offering a Buddha Puja at home, okay, think carefully and answer this question. Normally, you can acquire a lot of merit by offering a Buddha Puja, right? Yeah? You can acquire a lot of merit if you do it properly. You can acquire a tremendous amount of merit by offering a Buddha Puja or doing a Buddha Puja. Now, answer this question for me. She wants to offer a Buddha Puja, but she can't because if she does, then that's only going to upset her husband. And he's going to insult or desecrate the Sangha and earn lots of demerit as a result. So whenever she wants to offer a Buddha Puja, she thinks to herself, I must not be doing this right now because this is not appropriate. If I do this, it's only going to do harm to others around me. In other words, if I do this, it's going to take away others' peace. So by not offering the Buddha Puja, she allows those around her to remain in peace. Does she earn merits or not? What do you think? So remember, she doesn't offer the Buddha Puja. But if you examine her intention, she doesn't do it because if she does it, then it's going to upset others. Particularly someone who's a very good person, who does a lot of meritorious deeds, helping people, but one weakness, one flaw, and that is he has misunderstood who the Sangha is, and as a result, offering a Buddha puja or engaging in any religious activities is simply going to upset him and perhaps lose his cool. So she decides not to offer the Buddha puja. Does she earn merits or not? What do you think is the answer? I think you know the answer. You are proficient in the Dhamma, that you know the answer to this question, surely. Also during the day, I try to make myself always aware of my thoughts and thought process. Well, that is meditation. And during my day-to-day activities, I do constantly contemplate on my thoughts. That is the best I have been able to do. And kudos to you, madam. However, with this little that I do, I have achieved immense peace, of course. Sadhu, sadhu. Bliss and freedom in my life. The fires of desire, aversion and delusion that were once my guiding light is now but history. I can't even imagine the 180-degree transformation that has taken place in my life. I do have one question or concern though. Is this enough for me to achieve my one goal and mission, that is Nibbana? Okay, do you want to offer an answer? Yeah, here's what we'll do, right? So you've heard me read the email. Okay? How about those of you who listen to the email, you can send an answer to this question. Right? Because we're all Sangha, right? Bhikkhu Bhikkhuni Upasaka Upasika, we're all Sangha. Right? I want you to send an answer to this question. And what I'll do is I'll get someone to compile those responses and we'll send it as a reply to this lady to show her how the Sangha feels about her truly remarkable effort, her courage, her resolve, her determination, her kindness and compassion, and her thoughtfulness above all towards others around her. She's concerned that is she doing enough to achieve her goal and mission when all day long she's thinking to herself, I must not do anything that upsets this man who I live with, who feeds me, who takes care of me, who tends to me, and he's a good person. He engages in a lot of meritorious deeds, but only shortcoming we have is we can't engage in religious activities at home. So any meditation I have to do throughout the day, quietly, or when I go to bed, I can't offer a Buddha puja out loud. I can only do it in my own mind. Am I doing enough? All I have is my one goal and my one ambition, my mission is Nibbana. I don't want anything else. I can sense the fire of desire, aversion and delusion slowly fading away. But, Swaminahansa, am I doing enough? Right? How about you send a reply? Don't put it in the chat box. It'd be difficult to capture all that. Put it on a short email and send it through to the usual email address. And what we'll do is we'll get someone to compile that response together and we'll put it on an email and we'll send it back to this lady to show her how the Sangha feels about her, to show her the power that she has behind her. And then she'll realize she has nothing to worry about. She concludes saying, I would like to take this opportunity also to say a great big thank you to Venerable Dasahandru for the great stories he shares with us every week. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Venerable Sir, may you attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Remember, this is the same person unless I'm misinformed, I think this is right. This is the same person who sent us an email a while back, which I read out to you. But all the atrocities that she faced growing up as a young child, being abused by a member of the family, learning to hate people, and learning to earn favors from others in wrong ways. And then look at the transformation that has happened. This is someone who used to get angry. Remember? If this is the same person we're talking about, I recall she used to get very angry. So, what do you think? This is her question. My question, my concern, Venerable Sir, is this enough for me to achieve my one goal and mission, Nibbana? Given the circumstances, am I doing enough, sir? Is there anything else that I ought to be doing? Do you feel I'm doing enough? Right, instead of me answering that question, I'm going to give you all an opportunity to answer this question. Right, a week from today, make sure you get your responses in. So you have till next Sunday. Send them through. And time permitting, if I can get our responses compiled in one place, I might just read it out to all of you also. So the response that we're going to send back to this lady. How about that? As I say, folks, this is not a single venture. I'm not doing this all by myself. You will see when the responses come to this email. Like when I read those responses back out loud to you, you will realize how many of us are here together to do this. You will begin to feel the power of being united, the power of the Sangha. When a bunch of people get together for one purpose and one purpose alone, and that is to bring peace into the lives of others. How powerful that is, how strong that is, how unbreakable that is. Just wait and see. So if you're listening to this sermon, madam, you're going to have to wait for a week to get an answer to this question, because I'm not the one who's going to be answering this question. It's everyone on this sermon. So let's see what they have to say. I have another email that's come from someone. Venerable Sir, I'm 87 years old. How about that, eh? So when is it too late to start this journey? What do you think? Because you're in your mid-50s, aren't you? And you're thinking you're too late, right? I've done all these bad things in my life. By the way, I'm not reading the email yet. I've done all these bad things in my life and I'm too late to start this journey. I'm not going to be able to do anything. Right, so what's the point? I'm just going to give up. Yeah? Okay. Venerable Sir, I'm 87 years old. I'm a Buddhist. And I live in Montreal, Canada. A very good friend of mine, quite a few years senior to me, became a Buddhist monk after practicing as a lawyer, and I too wanted to become a monk, but he said that I should complete my engineering studies. I went to the UK and completed, and finally, after retiring, came to Montreal. Let's see if I can get the... In 2010, I started meditation and have done so regularly, an hour in early morning, waking up at 5:30 a.m. and again an hour at night before going to bed. I'm leaving out some bits of information which may not be entirely necessary to provide an answer. Having listened to your English sermons on YouTube, I was following the five precepts, but was for many years breaking the fifth precept. As I used to take or drink alcohol and referred to it as in moderation. However, after listening to your sermons, I realized that with regards to the fifth precept, there was no way that one could break that on that basis. I am since a teetotaler. I have tried to be a vegetarian but have had to give up as my doctor said that I have to. Now, I'll take a brief pause here. If you remember the interpretations of the five precepts, in the conventional sense, yes, it may have something to do with consumption of alcohol, but you have to understand that people who came to the Buddha and sought refuge in the Noble Triple Gem, right? Think about it. When you observe your precepts, first you take refuge first, don't you? You first take refuge and then you observe the precepts, right? It's not the other way around. So when you take refuge in the Noble Triple Gem, and I'll promise you all, before I conclude, I will explain to you what I meant right at the start of the sermon, that there's a more profound meaning to the Noble Triple Gem. Now, we're going the long way around, so this might be a good way to conclude that point. You always seek refuge in the Noble Triple Gem before you observe the precepts, right? That is always how it happens. Now, answer this question for me. Someone who believes that Nibbana is the only refuge, to free oneself from destitution. Okay? So Buddha is the only refuge. Again, Buddha is not a person. Superficially, yes, I'm not denying that. So when I say the Buddha is not a person, again, please understand, I don't mean this in the conventional sense. In the conventional sense, the Buddha is a person, renunciated at the age of 28, became Buddha by the age of 35, 45 years of service, at the age of 80, he passed away. That's the Buddha, conventional sense. But in a more profound interpretation, Buddha is really Nibbana. It is the state of having extinguished all defilements in the mind, and therefore having ceased becoming or bhava. One who has made extinct, or it's not really one, but rather the state of having made extinct bhava or becoming, and hence leading on to jati or existence. That state, folks, is Buddha. It's a state of mind. Buddha is a state of mind. In other words, Nibbana. Buddha is Nibbana. If you don't get this, just go back to the conventional interpretation that the Buddha is Prince Siddhartha who went on, left home, ordained, right? That conventional story. Nothing wrong with that. Fine, it's fine. I'm not saying replace this with that. I'm saying keep that and keep this both if you can, if you have room for both. But if there isn't room for the two of them, then leave this out and keep the one that you have always thought was the Buddha. But if you have room to consider a more profound interpretation of what the Buddha is, it is the extinction of bhava. It's the eradication of bhava. It's the extraction of bhava. And therefore, the stopping of coming into being of all suffering. You remember bhava from the dependent origination process. Dependent origination of what? Birds and bees and? Cats and dogs and? No, dependent origination of what? Dependent origination of suffering. So bhava leads to jati. Jati is what then? It's the dependent origination of suffering. So jati is what then? Suffering. So bhava is what then? The becoming. Becoming of what? Becoming of that which leads to suffering. Right? So the extraction, the extermination, the extinguishing, or the extinction of bhava, that is Buddha, which is a state of mind. Buddhang saranam gacham is the first thing you say before you go on to observe the precepts. Then dhammang saranam gacham. To get to that state, there is the path that one has to follow. In the Buddha's own words, yo paticca samuppadam passati, so dhammam passati. To see the dhamma, you have to see the dependent origination process of what? Cats and dogs and? Birds and bees and? No. The dependent origination of suffering. To see the dhamma, you have to... When you say, I have seen the dhamma, what you have seen is the dependent origination of suffering. How suffering comes into being. When you see how suffering comes into being, what is the next thing you want to do? When you see something's going to fall on your head in the next couple of moments, what do you do? Count to 10? Or you just move out of the way as soon as you possibly can? Exactly. So, Dhammang saranam gacchami is the realization of how suffering comes into being. Then what you need to do is you want to take the steps required to bring suffering to an end. Once you've done that, then the state of mind that you're in is Buddha, which is Nibbana. So what is it that you need to do once you have seen how suffering comes into being is to remove the causes that lead to suffering. That is what we have studied through the cause and effect principle. Causes bring about results. So once you have seen the causes that lead to suffering, the next thing you want to do is to remove those causes. What are the causes? Attachment is what leads to suffering. What is attachment based in? It's based in ignorance. So the eradication of ignorance and attachment is what needs to happen for suffering to come to an end. And the state of mind when suffering has been ceased, been made extinct, been extinguished or exterminated, That state of mind is Buddha. So that activity of eradicating, removing the causes of suffering, ignorance and attachment, is what Sangha is. So Buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi, Dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi, Sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Now, whenever we observe precepts, we first seek refuge in the Noble Triple Gem. So, when you have understood that the only path to happiness is Nibbana, or the only way you can achieve happiness, or happiness is defined as Nibbana, and the path to that is contained within the Dhamma, and what you need to do is remove ignorance and attachment, does it not beg the question, what has that got to do with a colored liquid in a bottle? What has that got to do? Have you ever looked at the ingredients of one of these bottles? Next time you get your hands on a bottle, I know you don't use that stuff anymore, but perhaps maybe you have an old bottle, or maybe when you go into the supermarket next time, this is not for the under 18s, by the way, do not even walk that way. Right? 18 and above. Pick up one of those bottles and look at the label on the back and see what the ingredients are. It will say alcohol percentage, and it will say ignorance and attachment. So when you drink the contents of that bottle, you fill your stomach up with ignorance and attachment. Therefore, it hinders you from attaining Nibbana. Because with every sip you take, you are also consuming ignorance and attachment. Right? You know, if they could invent a liquid that can put in ignorance and attachment, don't you think they'd invent a liquid that can take it out? If a bottle of alcohol can feed you ignorance and attachment, then surely a bottle of saline can rid you of ignorance and attachment. So bring on the saline. Why is it when ridding the mind of ignorance and attachment is a mental affair? Why is ignorance, the cultivation of ignorance and attachment, what has that got to do with the contents of a bottle? I'm very careful, that's why I'm only asking you questions. Because some people get very agitated, especially if they've had a bit to drink. They can get a bit agitated when they listen to this sermon and they go, oh, Swaminathan is saying that this is nothing to do with alcohol? No, I didn't say that. All I did was ask questions. You are coming up with the answers. And I told you, I reiterate, in a conventional sense, And this is the accepted idea in widely in society, that the fifth precept is to do with alcohol and not and some people say it's about taking it in moderation. So what the Buddha would have said then is, when you drink alcohol, just don't take too much. Just take a little bit. The Buddha? Do you know who the Buddha is? So why only alcohol in moderation? What about all the other precepts? He should have said, Paanatipata Majjapama Veramani Sikkhapadan Samadhyami. So when you kill, just kill a bit. Don't kill all of it. If you want to steal something, don't steal all of it. Just take a bit of it and keep the rest for the others. Right? Adinnadana Majjapama Veramani Sikkhapadan Samadhyami. That's what he should have said. Now, when you indulge in sensual activities, now just do a bit. Don't go all the way. That's a big no-no. But, you know, halfway, that's a good Buddhist. I mean, that would be a good advert or propaganda for contraceptions. As per the Buddha's instructions, don't go all the way. Do in moderation. Now when you lie, just lie a bit. Don't lie about the whole thing. Just lie a bit. And when you drink, just drink a bit. Not the whole bottle. So what you can do is you bring the bottle. I say it's a 2-liter bottle. You pour it into a 4-liter bottle. Now you're drinking the whole thing and you're only drinking a bit, right? You only drunk half of the bottle. That's a bit. If it still makes you feel bad, then maybe put into a 5-liter bottle or an 8-liter bottle, and you've merely drunk anything. I'm only asking you questions. Do you think that's what the Buddha would have said? Is this lady or gentleman, can't say, is he or she wrong to ask this question? Absolutely not. Why? Well, that's what we've learned. This is how we've always been taught. This is what we've always learned growing up. The fifth precept is about drinking, and you are only allowed to drink in moderation. So then really, if you to become a good Buddhist, you have to drink in moderation. So what if you don't drink altogether? You're still not a good Buddhist. Because what did the Buddha say? Drink in moderation. So someone who doesn't drink, tough. If you want to become a good Buddhist, you have to drink in moderation. So drink. So I commend, sir, madam, on your choice to become a teetotaler, because my personal take is it's just you might as well burn the money. At least it will give you some heat without killing you on the inside. That is my personal take on consumption of alcohol. Why someone needs a bottle of alcohol to keep themselves happy is a question I've never been able to find an answer to. Except for the fact that everything is a drushti. Now, otherwise, how is it pouring something down your throat that burns you all the way down? How does that give you a kick? Is simply a mind boggler for me. But I commend your choice to become a teetotaler. But I'd like to invite you to think along the lines of, do you think a supreme Buddha would have preached to someone who has already sought refuge in the Noble Triple Gem, who has accepted that Nibbana is the only refuge? Dependent origination is what I should see. And through dependent origination, you see suffering. And to bring suffering to an end, you have to eradicate the mind of ignorance and attachment. Attachment to what? Attachment to absolutely everything. So then it doesn't matter whether it's alcohol or mango juice. But someone says, I'm a teetotaler, I only drink mango juice. But I have my mango juice, I have to have a cup of that every day. Otherwise, my day just doesn't feel right. And another guy, he drinks a bottle of alcohol, he says, right, you know, anytime I can stop this. I genuinely can stop this. I just do it for the fun of it. I can stop it anytime. If you ask me, the one who's addicted to their mango juice is further away from Nibbana than the guy who gulps down a bottle of alcohol. As I said, pick up a bottle of whatever and look at the back and see if you have ignorance and attachment as the ingredients. Ridding the mind of suffering, attaining Nibbana, is an entirely mental affair. Has nothing to do with what you put down your mouth. Don't you think? See, I have to end my sentence with a question. I just don't want to upset anyone, that's why. Don't want to agitate people. Don't you think? If you think, no, I don't think that, okay, good. And I have tried to become a vegetarian, but I've had to give up, as my doctor said, that I have to. Okay. How much of that has to do with you being a Buddhist? You know, once the Devadatta, Thero, approached the Buddha and asked for him to lay down some rules for the Sangha, prohibiting the consumption of all meat or all animal products. And he said all monks should be vegetarian. Do you know the Buddha's response to that? The Buddha, who established the Mahasangha for the purpose of Nibbana and nothing else, the all-knowing one, the all-seeing one, the perfect one, rejected that request. And in his words he said, no, Devadatta, that's not going to work, not in my Shasana. Those who wish to become vegetarians may do so. Those who wish to remain non-vegetarians may do so. Neither of these practices have anything to do with the path, with my teaching, with the attainment of Nibbana. Therefore, I do not lay down this rule. Next time you go to the supermarket, get a pack of sausages. See on the back if they have ignorance and attachment. If they does, please don't take that. Anything that gives rise to ignorance and attachment, run a mile away the moment you hear about it. If it has nothing to do with ignorance and attachment, it is harmless to your Nibbana. Unless, of course, it can do harm to your physical body, which you need to keep in good shape until your mind has been cleansed of the defilements. Because if it starts to break all too early, then, you know, it's going to become difficult. But, is it good to become a vegetarian? People say so. People say it's better for the environment. People say it's better for the body. Some people do, some people argue otherwise. But that is not my job. I'm not a nutritionist. I'm a mental nutritionist. Has vegetarianism got to do anything with Buddhism? What do you think? As I said, just to double check, next time you get your hands on a bag of meatballs, look back at the ingredients. On the back, it'll say what is it made of. It'll say maltodextrin and xanthan gum and E45 and N62 and E1268, right, all the preservatives and color additives and all the rest of that. And it'll say chicken and beef and pork and all that. Just make sure you go through and see if you can find ignorance and attachment. If it's got ignorance and attachment, leave it. If it doesn't have ignorance and attachment, then make your choice solely based on what's good for your physical body. Don't make your choice based on what's good for your practice of Nibbana. Since the COVID restriction, I do more listening to Buddhabana and much more meditation. Now that, hats off to you, sir, or madam. Yes, with your sermons I have changed, and with meditation I have changed too. Well done to you. Now we are getting to the interesting stuff. I don't get as angry and live even more a simple life, but have way to go before I could escape from this samsara. Okay, now we're talking. I don't get as angry as I used to. Fantastic. So fantastic, I'll even give you fandabadastic. Well done, sir. Oh, madam, not sure really. The immediate instinct is to, when you see a bottle of alcohol, assume that it's a male, but, you know, I could be completely wrong. But well done, you. You don't get as angry as you used to? Now, that's the stuff that I'm looking for. And with the sermons, they've changed, and the meditation, now that is all really, really, really good stuff. But I have a way to go before I could escape from this samsara. So, again, a humble outlook on the path ahead, but I wouldn't worry. With this very limited time I have left, again, hats off to you. Why? Because you have come to recognize that. And here's the request from this person. Here's why I thought this was a very, very touching email. With this very limited time I have left, please, number one, you're ready for this? Please guide me. See, when I see that, how can I turn my back? You know, and besides the other things, right? Whoever this person may be, he or she thought that for the purpose of Nibbana, he'd have to give up alcohol and he'd have to give up non-vegetarianism. For the purpose of Nibbana, he was courageous enough to do that. I'm going to just say he, just for the ease of the conversation. That is truly commendable. Now that might have been entirely unrelated. However, the determination, the resolve, the mental energy that would have been required to give up things like that, which normally stick with us throughout our life from the day we pick it up, for someone to think one day to themselves, you know what, if alcohol is going to be a hindrance to my nibbana, right, sod it. If being a non-vegetarian is a hindrance to my nibbana, that's it, I'm going to give it up. Either rightly or wrongly, whatever they thought was a hindrance to their nibbana, they've given up. Now that, I truly appreciate. Very well done. Have you given up the right things? That I think you'll find answers to through these sermons, sir. Please guide me. Don't you worry. That we will. Two, I have tried to prepare myself for death by contemplating on death. How does one prepare themselves for death? What do you think? How does one prepare oneself for death? Is it by contemplating on death? That's a start. One prepares oneself for death by contemplating on anicca, dukkha and anatta. When you contemplate on death, in other words, I will surely die. I will die very soon. Yes, that may be true, but that doesn't necessarily prepare you for death. It doesn't take away sorrow, it doesn't take away grief, it doesn't take away the mental pain and torture that comes when Mara comes knocking on your door. When the Grim Reaper is standing by your side, it doesn't take the pain and the fear away. That is done by eradicating the mind of ignorance and attachment. And for that, you need anicca, dukkha and anatta. So, to prepare yourself for death, you know, this gentleman, I'm going to assume a gentleman, is 87 years of old, right? So surely he must prepare for death now, right? What do the rest of you think? Teenagers in the house, what do you think? 87 years, oh yes, oh my God, he should try proper contemplate on death now, right? What about the 18-year-olds? Hmm? 28-year-olds? What are you thinking? What do you think? What do you think this gentleman should do at 87 years of old? Contemplate on what? Death and nothing but, right? Whereas the rest of you can do what? Do you want me to ask you to put that list together? We did that once. At Alan Matineram. Remember? I asked you to compile a list. Right? Of who dies first and who dies last. And then everyone else in between. Pass a piece of paper around with a pencil. Put your name down. The order of death. Do you want me to... Shall we try that again? Because he's 87, right? So surely. What this gentleman's doing, everyone should be doing. Why? Life does not have a printed expiry date. You don't know when it's time to go. This gentleman might outlive all of us. Tell me I'm wrong if you can. I have offered an Atapirikara to the Minnesota Buddhist Vihara, although there is a Vihara in Montreal which is not open most of the time. Hence, my nephew who is in Minnesota has helped me to do so. Excellent. Very well done. And keep doing that. Keep doing merits. It may be you can't offer... Actually, no, you can offer an Atapirikara every day. And no, you don't have to go to Minnesota for that. In your mind, make that offering again. Pack it with your own hands, mentally. Imagine that in your mental world. Prepare it. Nicely. Beautifully. And offer it again and again and again to the Mahasangha. Offer an Atapirikara every day. Who can stop you? Doesn't cost you a penny. If you have pictures of your offering, then get a hold of that picture. Look at it. And imagine yourself doing that again and again, over and over and over again. Once a day. Once a day, offer an Atapirikara, sir. At the time of death, what can I do, as very likely I will not be able to have a monk around me? That is his third and final question. Why? Because he lives far away. How does that make the rest of you feel? Do you appreciate what you have? This gentleman's question is, at the time of death, what can I do, as very likely I will not be able to have a monk around me? At 87 years of age, this gentleman's wish, he says, is to be reborn as a human to enable me to achieve my goal, breaking from this cycle. Two things that you have that he feels he doesn't. One, time. Two, Kalyanamitta. Do you appreciate what you have? I thank you, sir, for this question, because I think it will do wonders. It will do great things for others as much as it will for you. I think your words will get others to think. It will inspire others. Others who feel that they've got time left in their hands. Others who feel that it's, you know, there's a temple next door, but I just can't be bothered. There's a temple in the village, there's a temple in town, there's a temple only a few kilometers away, but I can't be bothered because I'm too busy. Thank you for your question, sir. He's asking for guidance. Truth of the matter is, I don't feel one modicum of sympathy for this gentleman, because it is not sympathy I feel for him. I feel proud of him. Look at how much thought he's putting in to his salvation. far away from any hope of seeing any of us, in person at least, in this lifetime. Chances are he and I will never meet. Chances are he'll never meet Guru Swami Nuhansi. Do you appreciate what you have? Do you value what you have? He speaks of his accomplishments. I feel very proud of him. I don't get as angry as I used to and can live a simple life. I feel so proud of you, sir. You admit you started late in life, but that has not stopped you from achieving results. You are living proof. But it doesn't matter when you start. Results are for those who do. And for that, hats off to you. I appreciate your humility for you to say, I have a way to go before I can escape from this samsara. I appreciate your humility to accept that you have very limited time left. I appreciate your humility, your request to guide you. I wish more people, more young people were like that. People like us are here to help people like you, sir. Don't you worry at all. Do what you have continue to do, listen to the sermons, engage with us as best you can. There are bhikkhus, bhikkhusinis, upasikas and upasikas, the sangha. There are people on this sermon who are looking for opportunities to help others, just like yourself, sir. That is why they understand that there are people in all corners of this globe for whom coming to the monastery and listening to a sermon, sitting in front and face to face with a monk, is but a dream. They know that. So what they do is they do the best they can to bring the Dhamma, to take the Dhamma to you and to people like you. Whether it is in transliterating sermons, sharing word out, providing the means, the technology that is needed, to take these sermons in digital form as far and wide as possible. So don't you fear, don't you worry, because you have the Sangha looking out for you. Remain with us. Continue your practice. Follow the advice, the instructions, the guidance you receive on the sermons. And you will do well, I promise you. It does not matter that perhaps you might have started late in your life, because that is not what matters. Late or early is not what matters. The fact that you have started is what matters. The fact that you have been doing, and that's why I say, I'm really impressed by the fact that for someone, you know, usually people say when you grow old, when you become elderly, you are set in your own ways. As I say, you can't teach an old dog new tricks, right? Particularly in the kind of culture that you have learned to grow up in. For someone who used to take alcohol in moderation and used to be a non-vegetarian, right? To at least try to become a vegetarian. And to have gone from using alcohol to a teetotaler, all that in the name of Nibbana. That is why I'm really proud of you. Rightly or wrongly, you did that in the name of Nibbana. You did that in the name of the Buddha. Because you trusted him. Whatever it takes, I will do. That was the mental acumen that you had. That was your outlook. And that is truly praiseworthy. So what must you do? Continue doing what you're doing. I have supported my temple in Colombo and my grandmother's temple she built in Panadura. I have supported my friend that became a monk. Sadhu, sadhu. Now I contribute to the Minnesota Vihara, and as my wife is a Christian, we support her church too. Teruvan Sarnai. And Teruvan Sarnai to you too. That is truly remarkable. Continue with that. As I said, help open someone else's eye, and your eyes will be opened. Whatever you're struggling with, help someone else with that problem. With that very specific problem, with that particular problem, help someone else with that. And your problem will solve itself. If you're poor, help someone else become rich. Become wealthy. If you're handicapped, help someone else around. Give someone else a hand. If you're hungry, help someone else find a meal. If you're sick, help someone else feel better. That is the way it works. Become someone whose life's purpose it is to give peace to the lives of others. And you will most certainly win the Nobel Peace Prize. Thank you very much for your question. To the young ones, I urge you, do you think along the same lines? Are you heedless? So are you heedful? Do you understand the value of what you have, both time and the association of noble friends? To understand the value of it is not to be reassured that you have it and then do nothing about it. To understand the value of something is really to make use of it. Otherwise, you really haven't understood the value of it. You know, you can't tell yourself, I know all the Swaminarayanas at the monastery, right? I know that they have the Dhamma sermons on the Fridays and the Saturdays and the Mondays and the Tuesdays and the Wednesdays. I know I can offer Atapirika. I know I can do this. I know I can do that, right? I have even offered a kuti also, right? I know all of the monks at the monastery, right? And then you just sit down on your backside and do nothing. Then yes, you are doing nothing. Making use of it, or understanding the value of it, is really, literally making use of it. Associating the Sangha. Associating noble companionship. Making use of the opportunities to earn merits. You know, this is not an accusation. This is only a friendly and kind and gentle reminder. Particularly to the young ones. Because it matters not whether you're 87, 67, 47, 27, what if it's your last 7? No, I didn't mean yes. Nope, I didn't mean weeks either. What, you thought I meant days? Nah. seeking refuge in the Noble Triple Gem. So now you should understand what Buddhang Saranang Gacchami means. We've spoken about this in the past. I want to remind you again what Dhammang Saranang Gacchami means. Excuse me. And what Sangang Saranang Gacchami means. Seek refuge in the Noble Triple Gem, and you will most certainly, most definitely, most assuredly win the Nobel Peace Prize. Okay. Let us conclude the sermon on that note by transferring the merits out to all those who are deserving of these merits. And especially as we do when we invite those to join us. Do remember when you transfer merits, and please don't do this haphazardly. Do this with intention. Do this wholeheartedly. This is as important as listening to the sermon. Unless there are pressing matters, I would urge against leaving the sermon at this point. Because some people feel that it is acceptable, but my advice would be don't. There are all sorts of things that can hinder your path in Nibbana. Quite a few of them you can bat off only by transferring merits. So, don't take this lightly. Transferring of merits is a crucial part of one's practice of Nibbana. So therefore, let us take a moment to transfer the merits that we have all acquired by making offerings to the infinite virtues of the Noble Triple Gem, and chanting Pirith, listening to the Dhamma and engaging in various meritorious deeds today. First and foremost, let us remind ourselves how incredibly fortunate we are to be in receipt of the Lord Buddha's teaching. And with immense gratitude, let us transfer these merits to the bhikkhus and bhikkhunis, upasakas and upasikas, who since time immemorial have protected and preserved the sublime teachings of the Buddha and passed it down through the generations of the noble lineage in the form of the Tripitaka, which is thankfully available to us today to study, understand and comprehend the Dhamma. Let us also transfer the merits we have acquired to all members of the Mahasangha present throughout the world, including the chief prelates of all the chapters who have dedicated their lives to the Noble Path and have committed themselves towards the betterment of all sentient beings. Let us not forget that among them are the monks and nuns resident in your local temples and nunneries who have always been by your side through thick and thin, come rain or shine. Let us also transfer these merits to Guru Swami Nuhansa and all other monks resident at this monastery, as well as the Anagarikas and Anagarikas attached to the monastery. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits and express our gratitude to those who make great efforts to disseminate the teachings of the Buddha, be that by transliterating these sermons, sharing them out with others, or inviting others to join them. And may to the power of these merits, if any of them have been born in the woeful plane, redeem themselves and be born in the blissful plane. May through the power of these merits, they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also transfer the merits we have acquired to our devotees and friends of the monastery, who for the sake of merits continue to sustain the Mahasangha. This includes everyone from those of you who have contributed to the construction of the monastery to those of you who provide the Mahasangha with shelter, arms, robes and medicines, as well as those who have passed on their know-how and extend their well wishes. May to the power of these merits they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer merits to our mothers and fathers, husbands and wives, brothers and sisters, sons and daughters, grandparents, uncles, aunts, cousins and nephews and nieces, our elders as well as our friends and acquaintances, employers and employees, and all those who have helped us, supported us, assisted us in any way, shape or form. May by the power of these merits they be healed of any physical and mental ailments and overcome any obstacles to their spiritual progress. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer merits to the Devas and Brahmas, spirits and demons, and primarily the Sakkadeva, as well as all the numerous gods and deities, who are committed to protect and fulfill in the Samudra Shasane, Let us also transfer merits to our guardian deities and who keep a watchful eye over us and keep us out of harm's way. May through the power of these merits they prosper in divine power and wisdom. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer merits to our ancestors who have predeceased us, to all who have been our families, friends and acquaintances in this infinitely long journey in samsara, and who have helped us, supported us, assisted us in every way they could. Let us take a moment to transfer these merits. Let us also transfer merits to the members of the armed forces as well as the police force who have sacrificed their lives to protect the peace and harmony of our nation. May all who have lost their lives in the war, be their friend or foe, rejoice in the merits we have acquired today. Let us also transfer merits to all those who have lost their lives in natural calamities such as the tsunamis and earthquakes, landslides and pandemics, reminding ourselves that among them will be those who have been friends and family to us in this long journey in samsara. Let us take a moment to transfer merits to them, and may through the power of these merits, if any of them have been born in woeful plains, redeem themselves and be born in the blissful plane. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. And finally, let us all resolve that may through the power and blessings of all the merits we have acquired throughout the day, we be able to witness the advent of many hundreds of thousands of Arahatun Mahanses and Arahat Mahinin Mahanses on this blessed land. And finally, may through the power of all the merits we have acquired today, you and I and everyone who has helped make this program a success, become an Arahatun Mahanse or an Arahat Mahinin Mahanse in this very life and in the era of the Gautama Supreme Buddha itself. We will now conclude the sermon. May the Noble Triple Gem be with you all forever.